Welcome to the Fraudian Slip, the Identity Theft Resource Center's podcast, where we talk about all things identity compromise, crime, and fraud that impact people and businesses. I'm James Lee, the COO of the ITRC. Thanks for joining us today. This is National Consumer Protection Week. That's an annual event led by the Federal Trade Commission to highlight the risk of consumers being a victim of fraud and the resources available to them to prevent or recover from fraud when it happens. This is also the time of the year when we get a better picture of fraud trends in the previous year. In January, the ITRC released our comprehensive report on data breaches in 2023, the highest year ever for data compromises. And just a few weeks ago, the FTC released its annual data report on the scope and scale of fraud reported in the U.S. during the past year. At the risk of an understatement, 2023, when it comes to identity crimes and other consumer fraud, well, business was a booming. Here to talk about what risks consumers and businesses face in this fraud-demic and how we can all be better prepared to avoid becoming a victim is Christina Miranda of the Federal Trade Commission's Division of Consumer and Business Education. And of course, the ITRC's own CEO, Eva Velasquez. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
And welcome, Eva.
It's good to be back again. Happy to be here.
Eva, I'm going to start with you. We published our annual data breach report back in January, and one of the sort of standout statistics, along with the fact that we set an all-time high for data breaches that ReProbica reported last year, that was a 78% increase year over year. When you look at that data, and also when you look at the other things that we're seeing and we're tracking in terms of victim impact and small business impact, just general trends, what jumps out at you right now when you look at our data?
Well, you know, you said it when you talked about impact. That's the first thing that comes to mind to me is the seriousness of the impact. I mean, we've just been watching this really disturbing trend for identity crime victims over the last couple of years. And the biggest one is that thoughts of suicide have doubled in the last 2 years. 16% of victims told us that they were contemplating suicide after being victimized. And that's from our consumer impact report. And we're also seeing in that same report, vast majority of victims are reporting financial problems. Those continue to increase. And then the last thing is that it just keeps happening. The re-victimization rates continue to climb. They just keep going up like a hockey stick. And most victims have gone through this more than once. It was only, I think, 36% of ITRC victims said that this was the first time they were dealing with victimization. So that's, 64%? Of victims are going through this for the second or a subsequent time. It's no wonder that these emotional impacts are getting worse because people feel like it's not done. It just keeps happening to them.
Christina, going to bring you into the conversation now. You know, in the introduction, we mentioned Sentinel because that is the FTC's major report for the year when we're thinking about really all kinds of fraud, but you do particularly focus in on identity crimes and the impacts of that. So that's one of the major reports everybody looks for each year. Sentinel came out just a few weeks ago. Tell us about that report, but also tell us what the 2023 data tells us.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about what Sentinel is. So when people report fraud and other bad business practices to the FTC, that information goes into the Consumer Sentinel Network database, along with reports people made to other federal and state agencies and groups like the BBB and AARP. So Sentinel, as we call it, is a secure online database that provides federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies with access to reports from consumers about fraud, identity theft, and also other consumer problems. So all the reports to Sentinel help us look for patterns and trends to identify enforcement targets and then to alert the public to trending scams. We just released the data from fraud reports we received in 2023, which tells us that people lost $10 billion to scams last year. And that's $1 billion more than 2022 and the highest ever and reported losses to the FTC, even though the number of reports, which was 2.6 million, was about the same as last year. So one in four people who reported fraud also reported losing money to scams, with a median loss of about $500 per person. And email was the number one contact method reported last year, because for years it used to be the phone through calls. And examples of these are, you know, like phishing emails and or emails where scammers are pretending to be a business or a government agency to steal money.
Eva, that $10 billion figure is that's an eye-popping figure in any way you cut it, especially when you're looking at scams. Now, we hear a lot about scams at the ITRC, and we're also seeing this big increase in loss per individual. I remember when the Sentinel report used to say the average report was somewhere between $200 and $300 a person. To see now that it's more than $500 a person, that's a big jump in a small period of time. What is it, Eva, that victims are telling us?
Our experience in the contact center is absolutely mirroring the data in the Sentinel report. We are seeing the per person losses increase at a stunning clip. We just had a case where a widow and her daughter were dealing with the aftermath of the husband's suicide. And during the process, as they were cleaning things out, they discovered that he had lost $50,000, which was all of their savings, to a lottery scam. And the scammers weren't stopping there. They had already taken all of this family's money and frankly were complicit, I think, in taking his life. And they then continue to ask the family members for more money to pay the taxes and the processing fees. I mean, essentially to keep the scam going. They even put up a fake Facebook page to accept donations for the funeral costs, which of course are not going to the family. I mean, isn't that just unconscionable? But it's the per person losses. And we're seeing people losing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. And more recently, we're hearing from folks, these are individuals, this isn't an aggregate, who have lost over $1 million. I mean, that just takes your breath away. Last thing I'll say about this is I also think it's really important to remember that dollar losses are relative to income and resources. So while we look at the $500 loss and think, okay, well, that stings, not a big deal. A third of our victims lost between $500 and $10,000. And those amounts may give you pause, but they don't take your breath away. Like the $10 billion in total losses, the people losing $1 million as individuals. But we do need to remember that a lot of folks were talking about a loss of $1,000 or even $500. That can have life-changing impacts. It could be the difference between, you know, paying your rent or not, which is a huge deal for people.
We hear so many more contacts these days about this kind of identity crime than just say what we would think of as classical identity theft, where somebody just, you know, stole some of their information. They're turning around now and they're using the information that they have accumulated over years, and they're using it to pretend to be people that they're not. We talk a lot here about social engineering and these impersonation scams. What do you guys make about this jump in loss to imposters?
You know, it's a great question. So according to the 2023 Consumer Sentinel Data Book, imposter scams remained the top fraud category with reported losses of $2.7 billion, with a median loss of about $800 per person. So these imposter scams include, as you mentioned, all types of impersonators. These are people pretending to be your bank's fraud department, the government like the IRS, Social Security, and even the Federal Trade Commission, a relative in distress, a well-known business, or even a tech support expert. And the truth is that scammers continue to evolve and find new ways to scam people to steal personal or financial information and money. So here's an example. We've seen a new twist on imposter scams that we're seeing, and it starts with a call about some kind of a problem, maybe a suspicious credit card charge at Amazon. And then pretty quickly it turns serious when the caller says that they just noticed someone's using your information to commit a crime. and that your money is at risk. And then they'll transfer you to someone who can help, but that person is also an imposter. And a lot of times that someone is a scammer pretending to be a Federal Trade Commission agent, for example, who says that they'll help you protect your money. Now, we know none of this is true. There's no suspicious charge, there's no serious crime, your money's not at risk, and nobody from the Federal Trade Commission does anything like this. But scammers are convincing. And we're hearing from people who've lost their entire bank account or retirement savings to a scammer, thinking that they're protecting it.
We're hearing about that too. We are hearing this twist on, I'm here to help you. I'm a government agency, the FTC, Department of Homeland Security, IRS, and it's that same thing. Someone is committing a crime in your name, and it's atrocious crimes that people, I think they just have this reflexive, repulsive reaction. I don't want to be associated with drug trafficking or trafficking children. And so they immediately go, oh, what do I do about this? And that this person is offering to help. So they're really hijacking our brains and saying, oh yes, we'll help you. Let's move the money. So it doesn't feel like you're giving your money away. You feel like you're protecting it because you're moving it into another account, into a crypto wallet. It's just so it's so effective. And so we're definitely seeing it too.
Yeah, and I would probably be remiss right now if I didn't mention that, a lot of publicity over the last, a couple of weeks, as we sit here in, National Consumer Protection Week, about the financial advice columnist for New York Magazine who allegedly was talking to somebody from the FTC. Then turned them over to somebody who was supposedly from the CIA, and she wound up giving them $50,000 in cash. So I would encourage people to Google that and go read the article. It is a great example of how even people who know what to look for can fall victim to scams. And I especially like the fact that Chairman Khan of the FTC put out a statement that said the FTC is never going to send you to the CIA. Things that you never thought you would ever see or hear the chair of the FTC say or have to say. But the reality is that's just how sophisticated and complex these scams have become and how reliable they are. So whenever we got a lot of media inquiries about that. And Eva, whenever we're talking to the media or individuals or groups, the same question always comes up. What can I do to protect myself and my family in these circumstances?
You can have a lot of knowledge about this particular space, but still be vulnerable. We are all vulnerable. That is the point that I feel it makes. And I think she's really brave for talking about this publicly. So I commend her for that. And I think it highlights the challenge that we have because our identity and our identity credentials and our foundational identity documents, they're all associated and used in so many different aspects of our lives, particularly with all of these digital-only transactions. It feels impossible to keep it all secure. But I tell people that not to focus on how can I stay completely 100% safe, but how can I stay safer? And that's by adopting just good basic like identity and cyber hygiene habits, small practices that they become habits, and then together they'll make you safer. And it's just things like using unique passwords on all of your accounts, enabling MFA on all of your accounts, freezing your credit for sure, and being skeptical of all of that incoming communication. If you didn't initiate the contact, go to the source and verify. And I don't care what platform. Whether it's an email, a text message, a phone call, social media direct message, carrier pigeon, smoke signal, I don't care. If you didn't initiate the contact, verify it. And if you need help with the process of verifying it, there are plenty of free resources like the ITRC and the FTC's call centers that we can help. You don't have to just wait until something bad happens. we can help you suss these things out. And the bad actors, man, they love low-hanging fruit. So just adopting some of these habits will keep you safer and make it harder for those identity thieves and the scam artists. And that's the goal, right? Let's not make it easy for them.
You know, Christina, the one thing, obviously, as Eva just said, the FTC is there as a great resource before something happens. But one of the obviously unique things that government agencies have is you have enforcement authority. You can hold businesses and individuals accountable. Especially these days, there's a lot of emphasis on data privacy and security, and I know the FTC is looking at that as well. What can you do to help consumers, and what are you doing to hold businesses accountable?
You know, it's really important to help consumers, and we believe that the best way to protect yourself from fraud and scams is to simply stay informed. When you know about the scammer's tactics, you can spot the scam and avoid them. We have a lot of information available. You can sign up for the FTC's free alerts at ftc.gov/consumer alerts. And they will help you know what scammers are up to and will also help you talk to others about scams and spread the word among friends, family, and others in your community. Both research and experience say that talking about a scam helps you avoid it, but it also helps you, the people that you care about, avoid the scam too. It's important to share your story and report the frauds and scams that you see to the Federal Trade Commission at reportfraud.ftc.gov. Scammers, don't just scam one person. So if you see or experience a fraud, scam, or any type of bad business practice, just help your community and help protect your friends and your family by reporting it to the FTC. Every time you file a report with us at the FTC, you give a piece of the puzzle that essentially helps us build cases. It helps us stop scammers, and it also helps us alert others about, you know, the current trends that are being seen. And in just a few short steps, you can report fraud in English at reportfraud.ftc.gov or in Spanish at reportefraude.ftc.gov. For the question on what the FTC is doing to hold businesses accountable, well, you know, the FTC does this in a lot of ways. The agency investigates and takes legal action against businesses that engage in unfair and deceptive practices. It also enforces laws related to consumer protection, antitrust, and privacy. And when violations occur, the FTC imposes fines or requires companies to change their practices. And then the FTC also educates businesses on compliance and also monitors markets to ensure fair competition.
Last question, Christina, I'm going to start with you and then Eva can wrap us up. What can be done to turn around these trends we've been discussing today, or at least flatten the curve a little bit so we're not seeing the increases that we've certainly seen in the last year and really over the last several years?
Right. Well, it's the Federal Trade Commission's mission to help protect people from fraud, identity theft, and other consumer protection issues. And that's why we're working together with you all, with the ITRC and other partners for National Consumer Protection Week, because it's really important to share this information, to let people know about their consumer rights, and also to learn how to spot, report, and avoid scams. So the FTC has consumer education information in a dozen languages, for example, from Amharic to Vietnamese, in addition to English and Spanish, to help people spot and avoid scams. And they're online at ftc.gov/languages and available to order and print for free in Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese. And reporting fraud is also very important in the fight against scams. And as I mentioned, when people report fraud, they're helping stop scams and alert others in their community. So reporting is really easy online in English at reportfraud.ftc.gov or in Spanish at reportefraude.ftc.gov as well. I'm sorry, reportefraude.ftc.gov. We also take reports in languages beside English and Spanish. So to report in other languages, people can call 877-382-4357 and press 3 to select your preferred language. And the phone lines are open between 9 and 5 p.m. Eastern time. So that phone number again is 877-382-4357 and just press 3 to select your preferred language.
Eva, same question to you. What can we do to flatten the curve or reverse the trend?
Yeah, no big ask there, right? Just a small thing. How can we reduce these these epidemic crime rates? Well, I think all stakeholders have a role, and those roles are different. I love that Christina brought up the public-private partnerships and how critical that is. And we've been working with FTC, I mean, forever, years and years and years. And it's been, we can do some amazing work together. So I really do encourage businesses and government to think very strongly about what public-private partnerships they can leverage. But I also want them to think about the policies and processes that we currently use in and their impact on our authentication problem or process. Because really, if we look at identity crimes, that's the crux of it, right? We use static data to authenticate people, and it's just not working anymore. We talked about the record number of breaches last year, and it just makes the point that we have to devalue the data if we want to turn this around or flatten the curve. So we'd also like to see businesses and government focus some of their energy there. And then for consumers, I know we sound a little bit like a broken record because both Christine and I have been saying it, but building your knowledge about what to look out for, even a little bit, again, without the expectation that you're going to become an expert, but understanding that this is part of the world we live in and building your knowledge about it, but also not just that, knowing where you're going to go if you have questions, sort of like AAA. You can, you know, you can do everything you can to not have car problems or get a flat tire. You can drive safely, check your tires. You still can't prevent 100% of it, but you know that you've got that in your back pocket if you have a problem. I really want people to think about this issue in a similar way. So just know that organizations like the ITRC and the FTC and others, there's Better Business Bureau, there's AARP, there's a lot of places that have free resources that will help you. So know who you're going to call if you have a problem.
Thank you both. I also want to make sure everybody knows that the information that Christina has shared about how to contact the FTC and the various websites and phone numbers and everything going to be posted online along with this podcast. So if you didn't catch it during the audio portion of the program, if you go to the website, you'll also find the same information there. Again, thank to both you for joining us today. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you so much. It was great being here. Thank you.
And thank you, Eva.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. I can't wait to come back.
If you want to dig deeper into the 2023 Consumer Sentinel data, visit the FTC website at ftc.gov/data. If you think you've been the victim of an identity crime or you want to avoid becoming one, you can speak with an expert ITRC advisor about your identity issues. We're available on the phone. You can chat live on the web, text us, or send us an email during our normal business hours. Just visit idtheftcenter.org to get started. Join us next week for our sister podcast, The Weekly Breach Breakdown. Until then, thanks for listening.